Kia ora, Matt. Namahe kia koe. How are you tonight, Matt?
Very good. Very good to be with you. Oh, good to have a discussion about tax.
Yes.
You know, and I'm pleased you're bringing up these lax and Christopher Luxon rates.
Now,
and if you like, I can give our listeners a quick lesson in what actually goes on in the tax system.
Sure.
If you want.
Sure, please do.
So here's the thing, right? So how much tax you pay in New Zealand depends on how much income you earn, right?
Mm.
That's just the basics. Our tax system is a progressive system, and I'll get to that in a moment, which is different than just paying the same flat rate on every dollar you earn. So currently, if you're earning any income up to, say, $14,000, it's 10.5%. Extra income over $14,000 and up to 48 grand is 17.5 or thereabouts. Extra income over 48 grand and up to 70,000 is 30%. And extra income over 70,000 is 33%. So keep an eye on that extra income over 70 grand. A common misconception, though, is that you pay all of your tax at the same rate.
That's right.
You just find what band your salary is, and then you pay the rate on all of your income.
It's called marginal
and
tax
under that
rate,
system,
isn't it?
That's right. But under this system, someone earning 50 grand would pay 30% tax on every dollar they earned. But actually, that's not how it works in New Zealand, because in New Zealand, we have a progressive tax system, and that means everyone pays the lowest tax rate on the first 14 grand they earn, no matter what their total annual income is. And if someone earns more than 14 grand, they'll pay the 17.5, but only on their income above the $14,000 threshold. Confused yet? Hold that line. If they earn more than 48 grand, they'll begin paying 30% tax. But again, this higher rate's only going to apply to their income above 48 grand. It continues in that progressive way. So essentially, what Christopher Luxon is proposing to do is those bands of a progressive tax system, and you're absolutely right, it means absolutely nothing to those earning below $70,000, but it does mean a lot to those earning over 70. And in terms of that $3 billion figure, I actually think it's a lot higher than that. So we've done some numbers here at the National Māori Authority, and we believe it's roughly about $4 to $4.5 billion as a whole. Because what the National Party haven't done, which they never do, is they don't take into account, as you've rightly pointed out, how much revenue would be lost that would otherwise be invested in health, education, social services, and so on and so forth. So while they're focusing on personal tax rates, what they should be doing, and they all should be doing, is actually having a look at something that they can get a win on, which is the corporate tax rate. So basically, what we should be doing is we should continue to have a look at pay equity agreements. So we need to be lifting pay in those industries where we know we still have problems, because we're going to be competing for supply of workers with other countries as we come out of Omicron. So that is going to see us need improve wages paid as opposed to taxes on wages, because aggressive system already works. So, mate, I know that it might sound a lot to comprehend, but my goodness, the whole thing is just nonsense.
So Matt, just from a strategic perspective, let's just try to sort of step back a bit. Why do you think that he introduced a tax policy 18 months out from an election? Because normally this is something that you would do close to the election for two reasons. First of all, it gives people less time to do the figures, all right? And secondly, it gives other parties less time to outmaneuver you, because basically he's saying this is our core economic policy, tax cuts, tax reforms. He won't call it cuts, he'll call it tax reforms. Some 18 months out, it gives Grant Robson the ability to come back with him and to a more appealing type economic platform. Why do you think he did it 18 months out?
I think they're struggling with narrative. I think they're struggling with narrative. I think they're struggling to identify some issues that they can hang their hat on. They're not going to win in terms of the social sort of stuff that Labour always win the game on, right? And they're falling back to that traditional, we know how to run the economy better than anybody else, including Labour, and they're going to go down that path. So Labour has a history of X, Y, and Z, but actually what's been different over these last 5 years of Labour, so to speak, is that actually the economy's been managed much better than most OECD economies around the world per capita, right? So our debt ratio is lower, our income to debt rate is lower than, say, for example, other countries such as Europe and North America, and so on and so forth. So
inflation is high, but we live in inflationary periods. We've got, we've got the issues in these things tend to be temporary, don't they?
They do tend to be temporary narratives, but the underlying issue with inflation, I talked to Bernard Hickey about this last night, and I've just come off a call with government ministers as well on the same issue. Look, inflation is driven by some other big ticket items, and that includes housing. The reality is that even though housing or housing valuations have gone slightly up in some locations, it seems like there's a recalibration of the market now, right, on house valuations and prices. But that has had an immense amount of pressure on inflation, as has things such as food and petrol prices.
Well, I just want to,
what's going,
Matt, if I can, let's just talk about housing for a minute, okay? We've seen the GVs released in Tamaki Makaurau, and I know that our listeners get a bit hoa, Tamaki Makaurau, but it's a huge population base and it has an effect on the rest of the country. But here is the thing, that landlords, and I'm a landlord, I've told everyone I'm a landlord, say I get $4,000 back, plus I'm able to flip a house in a shorter period because of the bright line test, which is in effect the capital gains tax, isn't it?
Right.
I'm able to flip my rental property quicker and buy another rental property, because that's what landlords tend to do, because it's relatively cheap money. It's almost a certain bet in terms of return over a period of time. You might have to wait. Cycles come and go, but by and large, 3 or 4 year period, you're going to get an increase on it. And of course, there's no capital gains. But surely, this type of policy will only fuel housing unaffordability.
Well, it does and it doesn't. I mean, the problem with housing affordability is building enough stock to keep up with the demand. And as our population grows, we're always going to have to just build more. And what we do is we don't have discussions about building up. So one of the things that the government did was relax requirements around planning, right? So, for example, instead of just being able to build a one-story or a two-story, you can now, under the same sort of consenting process, build three stories. And that, for a lot of developers, will mean in places like Auckland, you can now increase the number of rooms available on market. But there's other things that National are just not addressing. So, for example, their housing policy doesn't speak of it. They haven't discussed anything around relaxing corporate tax rates. And let me just briefly touch on that for a moment. If we are going to increase wages, that will put pressure on small business. Of course it will. But we can alleviate some of that pressure on small and medium-sized business by addressing a reduction in the corporate tax rate, say from 28%, even down by 0.5 to 1%. Who knows? So the sort of economic policy that they're putting out there just doesn't make any sense.
But if you wanted to fuel, if you wanted to assist small businesses, what you would simply do is you would drop the corporate rate for, say, businesses that earn under $300,000. That's what you would do. And that would give immediate relief, wouldn't it?
Well, the other one that you do too, which makes absolute sense, is you'd introduce two new regimes. Number one, you'd increase the ability to for people to get concessions around research and development, right? So that means for our whānau that are listening, if you're a small business and you're in one of those growth demand organisations such as health technology or whatever it might be, you could apply for an R&D grant and by default you could get a concession on your tax through it, right? So that's the first thing. We should, and National should be plugging that away like a brass razoo. But the other one that we should be having a look at is we should be doing tax relief on small businesses wanting to do capital investment. So, for example, we know that at the moment a lot of small businesses are hitting the wall, but if we can give them relief in terms of, here we go, we're going to apply a capital investment subsidy for you to go out there and buy stock. We know that sort of thing is an economic stimulus measure that ends up people going into, say, for example, other shops and other businesses to buy equipment and so on and so forth. So what I'm trying to get to is this policy by Luxon actually makes zero sense at all. And so far out to just individualise it around personal tax, it loses the shine or the appeal of National being that the government of the economy Well, you can't be the governor of the economy if your policies make no sense with billions of dollars in a deep, dark black hole.
Matt, can we pivot, please? We saw the damp squib of the report yesterday from the Commerce Commission that basically said that the answer is to allow greater competition, and one of the mechanisms they talked about is about freeing up land, about the duopolies who own a lot of the land and placement where supermarkets would thrive. Let's just address that issue. That is a 3 to 5 year fix if that occurred. It's not going to help whānau out in the near future, is it?
Yes and no. There are a couple of things that could have happened almost immediately that would have seen relief over 3, 6, 9, and 12 months.
Yeah, but the plan, the big hitting issue that the Commerce Commission talked about yesterday was putting pressure on the duopolies in terms of allowing more facilities to be built. That's a mid to long term plan in itself, isn't it? It's not going to give immediate relief.
It is. Nothing that happened in the Commerce Commission report released yesterday is going to offer any relief to anybody in New Zealand at all. It was a weak report. You might as well just slap people around with a wet bus ticket, and it also relies on self-regulation and self-monitoring and self-reporting. And that's why I've written to David Clark, the Minister, today, and asked for the ACCC from Australia, which is the Commerce Commission's counterpart, to come in and peer review the report. But it's a waste of space.
But I'll tell you something, Matt. I've studied the equivalent in Australia. In Australia, the equivalent of the Commerce Commission, they act, don't they? They don't muck around.
They do.
Yeah.
They do. And I was involved in the merger between the Australian Broadcasting Authority and the Communications Authority to become ACMA. You know, and I remember those days quite clearly. And there are two things in that country that work extremely well. One is the ACCC, and the other one's the Productivity Commission. You know, over here, the opportunity was just completely lost yesterday to take formative action. And no wonder the supermarkets didn't make any commentary yesterday, because they were probably out drinking the champagne, popping corks, and having
the big winners.
Hey,
yeah, Matt,
they are the big winners.
The big winner. Hey,